Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time, right?
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. This is Sell or Die, the only sales podcast on the planet that isn't afraid to say you're either selling or you're dying. Because there's no second place in sales. Win or go hungry. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Glackow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And today, we are going to help you sell like hell.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a great guest coming up. But first, we want to introduce you to the one, the only, our man behind the curtain, behind the glass wall.
Wait, it's a glass window.
What? You know, it's a metaphor here. It's okay. Our amazing producer, Mr. Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. I want to remind everyone they can subscribe to this podcast and share it with their friends on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die and make sure to leave us a review. We always love getting feedback from the diehards out there.
Five stars or nothing.
That's
Doug
right.
Doug sounds amazing on the mic.
We're the Uber of podcasts. We want a five-star rating.
Except we don't rate you. You only rate us. And don't forget to join us for Motivation Mondays, our live sales meeting on Facebook.com/Jeffrey Gittimer. We put on the podcast feed as well. But if you join us live on Facebook, you get to see us, interact with us, engage with us, ask us questions, or just say hello.
Okie dokie. Let's get to the rest of the show. It's time to sell or die.
Joined by the authors of our first book of our book club series. The book is Stop Selling and Start Leading. The authors are Jim Kousis, Barry Posner, and Deb Calvert. Welcome, welcome. Today we have Deb and Jim here. I'm so excited that you guys are here. Join us on May 10th for our live Facebook discussion of the book.
There's various times we'll make the announcement online, but whenever I'm honored to meet writers, fellow writers.
Real writers who actually write.
Especially ones who have depth of knowledge and depth of character. I want all of the diehards that are in our audience listening or even watching some to know that this is a significant departure from other books that have been written about sales or leadership. This is a book about both. And I think that when you stop to think about it, the salesperson may not consider him or herself a leader, but in fact they are, because they're leading the customer into a decision. And maybe that's their first, you know, baby step into the leadership position. And they don't even think of it as that. They think of themselves as a salesperson. And what we'd like to do is to talk about what is the departure from the norm here that makes this book totally attractive for someone to read, whether they're in sales or leadership.
Let me respond initially, and I know Deb, whose idea this book was, will have her own perspective to this. But, you know, for as long as we have been writing on leadership, and thank you for that acknowledgement that we are in fact writers, researching and writing on this, starting back in 1981, Barry Posner and I have had one golden rule, which is that leadership is everyone's business. It is not the private reserve of a few charismatic men and women, people who are born into it, people who have position, people who have title. It is, we find leadership in every demographic imaginable. We got data from 72 different countries. We have people at all levels. We have students. We have senior citizens. We have volunteers. We have nonprofit, for-profit. Leadership is something that everyone is capable of doing. Let me offer you just one bit of data. The most frequently asked question we ever get is, are leaders born or made?
Mm-hmm. I get the same question in sales.
You get the same thing, right?
Exactly.
All the time. So Barry and I have come up with an answer because we get asked that question so frequently, which is, I've never met a leader who was not born.
Yeah. I get this. It's pretty interesting. In sales, you get the objection, your price is too high. And I have created the answer for that for salespeople when they say, our price is too high. I've never heard that before. And that allows the other person to think twice about what the hell they've said.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think the point is that all of us are born. The question is, what do you do with what you have before you die?
Mm-hmm.
We have these abilities. What do you do with them?
Well, if you've ever said, follow me, that sort of puts you into the category, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, Deb, what do you
Deb has some things to say about this.
Yeah, Deb, just from a sales perspective, what do you think of it? And then from a leadership perspective.
So I think it's a departure in a couple of ways from a sales perspective. One of those being that most sales books set out to figure out how to enable sellers, how to make them better able to do their job. And we certainly did that. We asked buyers, in fact, what it would take for them to be more responsive to sellers. But we also set out to not only enable, but also ennoble sellers, to help them be able to step back into that place where they feel a little swagger and confidence that comes from feeling worthy and important. That's the definition of ennobled, to feel good about the work of selling again. And one way that they're able to do that is to step into their full potential as a leader, not to feel like they're some stereotypical seller that all those negative portrayals in the movies and some of the examples that they see and wrongly follow indicate that they ought to be.
It's not just in the movies, Deb. You can find it at any car dealership.
Yes. Following the wrong example.
Unfortunately, it's in real life too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you enable and ennoble them?
I love
them?
Ennoble.
I
don't
love
you?
That
yeah,
word.
That's a great one.
How do you help someone make them love to sell and lead? I mean, talk more about that.
You know, we open the book. Chapter one opens with a story of a seller because there's buyer research and seller stories both in the book. And the seller in that chapter is Amy Spellman. She became a salesperson with all kinds of good intentions about helping people. She saw income potential for herself. She wanted to do things that would make a difference in other people's lives. Unfortunately, those initial examples that she had around her or that she thought were the right ones to follow were those old school stereotypical car salesman kinds of examples. And so she pretty swiftly left selling because it didn't feel good to her. It didn't feel authentic. And one of the five practices of exemplary leadership, which comes from the work that Jim and Barry have done, one of those practices that we carry over into our research and into the book, Stop Selling and Start Leading, is how do you model the way? When you model the way, you know your own values, you align your actions with your values, and you stay true to your values at the very same time that you are genuinely interested in knowing about the values of your buyers so that you get natural alignment, not something that's forced and phony and doesn't feel good. That's one way to become ennobled.
And do you find that just knowing about them is the right thing, or do you need to help them also?
Yes. Knowing about the five practices is what you do first. Knowing about your buyer's values is something that you do as a part of one of those practices. But yeah, everything is action. Leadership is a series of choices. What do I do with the situation at hand? What do I do to show up as a leader? And it's all behavioral, which makes it easy to access.
Yeah. One of the things that, again, from the very beginning of our research till present time, is we found that credibility is the foundation of leadership. And you ennoble yourself when you become credible, when you become authentic, know your values and beliefs. But when you ask constituents, what is credibility behaviorally? So when you ask a buyer or when you ask one of your direct reports, what credibility is behaviorally, they tell us it's put your money where your mouth is, walk the talk, do what you say you will do, Dwizzy with, D-W-Y-S-Y-W-D for short. And so people won't believe in the message until they believe in the messenger.
Correct.
I totally.
My philosophy has always revolved around the salesperson, they buy you first. If they don't buy you, they're not buying anything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It is a relationship, as you point out in your books.
Yeah. So, Deb, you just mentioned a story about from chapter one. And actually, you guys, what you've done in your book is each chapter starts off with a story from a salesperson or someone in the C-suite. Can you tell us one of your favorite stories from the book and why you decided to start each chapter with a story?
There are so many really good stories. Here's what we did, just to give you a little background. We went out to sellers. We just did an all call across social media. We spread the word and we got over 500 stories from sellers.
Wow.
The only question we gave them was this. We said, hey, tell us a story about your own personal best in selling. What did you do when you were at your personal best? Because we didn't want to feed them any of the right answers. And then we compared that to our buyer research to see if what buyers wanted was also showing up in the stories that sellers were giving us of those times at their personal best. One of the hardest things about writing this book was picking the stories because there were so many good ones. So
I hear a second book coming down the road.
Yes. Yeah. The reason we did that is because we wanted sellers to have something they could relate to see what these leadership behaviors did look like in practice at times when sellers were getting extraordinary sales made.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the fact that they're going to buy hundreds of books to brag about.
Well, they might. We're not opposed to that.
They should. So what's one of your favorite stories?
The one that comes to mind right away, it's in the leadership practice known as Challenge the Process. And it comes from a guy named Ted Hyman. Ted was selling technology. And one of the things he decided to bid on was a project for the Department of Defense. It was a project that became a matter of national security. But Ted and his team had to figure out how to do something that had never been done before, that frankly, they were incapable of doing. And yet he just felt very compelled. He went and he used Outsight to look outside of what he already knew, to go and talk to other competitors and other potential partners to figure out ways that they could collaborate to create this solution. And ultimately they did. They created a solution, something that had never been done before. It became a piece that solved for this national security issue. He personally won an award called the Gracie, which is an award that goes to someone who helps with matters of national security. Wow. And he did all that from the job of salesperson.
Wow.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's totally cool. And what is Outstart?
Outsight.
Oh, what's Outsight?
You guys are like making up new words. I love this.
They're all actually in the dictionary. Jim, why don't you do that one?
It's actually in the dictionary.
All right.
It's the cousin of Insight. So when you think about insight, you think about how you take in information and get ideas yourself. Outsight is really about paying attention to what's happening externally from you. You're paying attention to your buyers, paying attention to the marketplace, paying attention to trends, paying attention to what's happening in the world outside of you. Because what we know is that most innovative ideas, most creative ideas don't come from insight. They come from outside.
Right. And for you diehards out there, that doesn't mean watching another episode of CSI bullshit. It comes from actually paying attention to your immediate world around you and what's happening within the framework of your marketplace.
I wish that outside was
call
on.
It, don't you, Jeffrey? Antennas up?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Way to go.
I do call it antennas up. But that was from my mentor, Earl Portnoy, the great Earl Portnoy, who said, always keep your antennas up.
Exactly. And that really is the message to leaders is always keep your antennas up. Always look outside to understand the world around you. Don't assume that you're the one who's going to come up with the best ideas.
I want you to understand what's happening right now, those of you who are listening. Jim, who we have never met before, correct?
Yes, correct.
We have this responsibility here and this opportunity to talk about a great new book, Stop Selling, Start Leading. So I look at the book. I'm the interview Jen, and we've discussed it around the table, we've created questions, and all of a sudden Jim comes on and starts to quote me. Which is...
Wait, Deb did it too before we were even recording.
Yeah. So what happens there is there creates a synergy of, okay, now I want to know more because you know about what I know about. And there's an ability there to connect at a level that goes way beyond simply doing something about your book, way, way beyond. Now it's personal and it's more emotional. And that context creates a much deeper dialogue, a much more meaningful dialogue, in my opinion.
And we just chose a book because we liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that. Who knew?
Well, you know, this is what we talk about in the book, the awesome connecting experience, the one that buyers respond to. Buyers are just human, and we're all responding to each other at a human level because we have some natural places where our thoughts and ideas overlap and where they have some synergies.
But it starts with a connection, an emotional connection.
Yep. Yeah.
And you have done that very successfully. So thanks.
Way to go.
Way to go.
Jim, what's one of your favorite stories from the book?
Well, you know, one of my favorite stories is a story that's in, I'll tell you, it's in the chapter on Inspire a Shared Vision. Deb, it's the story of the gentleman in the newspaper business who...
Brian Snyder.
Brian was kind of working over the Christmas holidays, and he had one particular customer who just wasn't buying their service. This was advertising. And so he was quite taken by the challenge of persuading this person that they should buy. And because it was the Christmas holidays and people were occupied with the holidays, he decided he would call on this customer and present to that person many options for them with regard to advertising. And he came in with storyboards of ads that he would propose. And as we just had this last dialogue, it was clear to the buyer that this person had done his research, had really looked into their needs, had understood their marketplace. And as a consequence, after many attempts on the part of the newspaper to sell and failed to acquire this person's business, Brian was successful. And that what that story points out is if you spend the time to understand the needs, the values, what your customer hopes their business will become to their customers, you'll have a much greater chance rather than talking about the price of the ad, the size of the ad, you know, the color of the ad, the graphics that might go into it. What you talk about are their needs and aspirations. You present possibilities to them that are exciting and get them enlisted. And so that's one of my favorite examples.
It's interesting that you bring that up. I think advertising, other than insurance, is one of the most difficult sales on the planet because it's intangible. When you buy it, you have an expectation. And normally that expectation is not always met. I can give you a bunch of examples, but there's an old book called Obvious Adams about this guy who was in the advertising business when he was just an upstart. And you might want to direct some of your readers to take a look at that because it would be in perfect harmony with what you're explaining right now. It's an old pamphlet book that came out in the early 20s, and it's an amazing example of how some guy just looks at the obvious stuff and sells it.
Deb, you're very well known in the sales field. What made you want to write or co-author a leadership book?
Well, I have, for the past 15 years or so, I've been living in these two different worlds, these parallel tracks. I have spent time in sales, which is my original career, and I've spent time in leadership development, which one day became part of my career because the publisher of a newspaper walked into my office one day and said, "Hey, Deb, we're going to need some kind of training to develop leaders around this place. What can you do?" And
got it.
Literally, I had a bookshelf.
That sounds like a great boss.
Yeah.
And by the way, we need it Monday.
Yeah. No, yesterday.
But I didn't know any better. So I just looked at the books that were already on the bookshelf in this office that I had. And there was one book, only one, on leadership. It was the first edition of The Leadership Challenge. And Jim Kouzes and Barry Posner had written that book. I didn't know them at the time, but that was the book on the shelf. And I opened it and I liked it. And don't tell Jim that I said this because it probably
violates
all kinds
of
laws. We won't tell him. Earmuffs, Jim.
Earmuffs. I developed
a program
before I knew that there were right ways and wrong ways to do that. So that's how I got exposed to leadership development. And then throughout the next 5 or 10 years, I kept using it and liking it. I finally got to a Fortune 500 company where they paid money for me to use it and to get trained in it. And that's how I met Jim and Barry and became even more familiar with the leadership challenge. By then, I'd also gotten schooled in lots of other leadership development work, most of which has Jim and Barry in a footnote anyway. So it always reinforced what I knew to be very good stuff. It's all evidence-based, the work that they've done. And what caused me to want to write a book about leading for sellers was that I was going through a very, very rigorous process that Jim and Barry have for the people who choose to become certified masters in the leadership challenge, mm-hmm. facilitators and coaches. And in that whole process, which took a great deal of time, a couple of years, Barry was my mentor, and he had given me an assignment to really, really pay attention very closely to what people are doing when they're effective as leaders. And so I became sort of obsessed with that idea, and I was watching for it as I was out in the field on coaching calls with sellers, and it hit me like a lightning bolt. My two parallel tracks, I don't have to keep them separate anymore. I think they belong together, because what would happen if salespeople adopted the behaviors of leaders?
That's cool.
Wow. It was. And then
I want to key in on one of the things that you talked about, evidence-based. Mm-hmm. What percentage of those salespeople or those leaders rely 100% on evidence-based versus a percentage on gut-based?
I don't know what that number is, but it's a scary one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been a gut-based person my whole life. You know, I have a feeling, and I tend to have gone with my feelings. Yes, I'm well-read. Yes, I have a lot of experience, but sometimes you don't always play by the book in order to get the end result. Is that fair to say, Jim?
Yeah, that is definitely fair to say. And I think the answer is maybe 5% rely on evidence-based. Yet what we find is that when we ask customers why they like our work, why they adopt our work,
yeah,
variably in the top two or three responses is it's evidence-based. We like it because we know we can trust that these practices have been proven to be effective. So we've collected, as I said, data from 5 million respondents on the extent to which people who use these five practices less to very frequently are successful, both in terms of engagement of constituents and also profitability, productivity, and other success measures that they might use. So people can count on what they read. They know they can count on it. Mm-hmm.
So for those of you out there, diehards, what he's talking about is big data.
Yeah.
And data has proven to be the winner in the end, more often than not. Even my own Philadelphia Phillies this year, the manager is data-driven. He's running the entire team. He's taken all baseball, I guess, I don't know what you call it, folklore, that a left-handed batter is supposed to face a right-handed pitcher, and he relies 100% on the algorithms that he has from his computer.
And I rely 100% on having Jeffrey bring up a Philadelphia sports team reference every episode.
Right. And your point would be?
This is totally cool. Jeffrey is back on the road giving public seminars. I love it. Jeffrey, you're in high demand, man. People are emailing asking when you're coming back, and you're back. If you've never been to Des Moines, now is the time to plan your visit. Jeffrey will be appearing live, delivering a seminar on leadership and a seminar on sales mastery on May 17th and May 18th. Go to cgittimer.com, and get your ticket. And while you're there, get one for your entire team. We'll see you there.
And if you're from New York City, Des Moines is in Iowa.
Okay, so Deb, you mentioned this this parallel track and all of a sudden combining it. So sellers and leaders didn't have to be separate, but they could be one and the same. And I think a lot of salespeople don't necessarily think of themselves as a leader unless they're a manager. So talk about how our diehards can become sales leaders without even managing a sales team.
So, you know, I have to harken back to what Jim said. Leadership is everyone's business. Leadership is for everyone. Leadership isn't the same as senior management. So no matter what it's called in your organization, leadership is not reserved for a select few at the top of the org chart. It's a choice. To be a leader means that you choose certain behaviors and you know where you want to guide people, and you then deliberately step into your potential as a leader. You think of yourself differently and you make different kinds of behavioral choices so that others will want to follow you, that they'll feel good about the places that you could take them.
And do you think of them as people that are leading their customers to the right choices? Are they salespeople that are coaching their other sales, their other sales team members? How would you define it granularly?
Yes. So the book talks about both. How do you show up as a leader with your buyers? And inside your own organization, what are some of the things you can do as you're collaborating with, partnering with the folks in other departments, with the others on your team? I found, as I began to think of myself more as a leader and do this deeper dive into learning about leadership, I found that once you begin acquiring those behaviors, they spill over. Suddenly, it's not something that you have to put on a hat. I'm a leader now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of who you are. And I know, Jim, you've got research and thoughts that go well beyond my own experience, but I'd be curious.
Well, you know, Jeffrey, and to the question around, you know, our experience with the data that we've gathered both on sellers and leaders, and going back to that question, I think it's what's really important and why people find that data-driven books like ours, like Stop Selling and Start Leading, are attractive to them is that they can see that sellers who, for example, shape the vision of their buyers ultimately close more sales.
That they can see the outcome of what's going to happen after they make the purchase, the vision?
Well, that they are able to envision with the buyer what the future looks like to the buyer.
Cool.
And so they get into that space. They occupy that space with them. I can imagine you driving this car. I can imagine you using this product and accomplishing what you want with this, what this service that we're mm-hmm. providing. And so understanding that we are, what we're presenting here in these five practices that apply to sellers and the seller-buyer relationship is as relevant to them as it is to a manager inside an organization, managing salespeople or managing technology.
So I have one thing that really jumped out at me when I was reading. You have a practice 3 is challenge the process,
mm-hmm.
or if you're from Canada, the process. And there's a whole tribe of people using something called the challenger sale,
mm-hmm.
where some young kid comes in and challenges a CEO that his thinking's not right. And I don't think that's the kind of thing that you're looking at here in this book. I think rather this is a thought process rather than a verbalized process. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I know. Deb has some very specific examples to illustrate this, but for those not familiar with Challenge the Process, it's about two fundamental commitments that you make as a leader. The first of those is to search for opportunities, and that's where outside comes in, to search for opportunities to grow, innovate, and improve.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of that is to experiment, and when you experiment, you are taking risks, and when you take risks, you make mistakes. And so you have to have the attitude of learning from those mistakes. That's what we mean by challenge the process. So Deb, what's that mean in a sales context?
Well, as it does with all leadership, when you're challenging the process, you are challenging yourself to look further, farther, think differently about what's new and what's next. You're challenging yourself to do those things, and you're challenging yourself to take those risks and experiment, possibly to fail, and then to learn and pick up and try something else. When you are able to challenge yourself and the processes that you work with, you earn other people's respect and trust, and they see that you have success because of the innovations and the incremental wins, the small wins that you're making. At the same time, you're using the other four practices of exemplary leadership to demonstrate what you bring to the table, the value that you create for your buyers, and you earn the right to challenge them too. Nobody wants to be challenged. You said, Jeffrey, nobody wants to be challenged by the kid who graduated yesterday about business things they know nothing about. And I've certainly heard plenty of executives rail against that notion. So you have to
rail against is one thing.
Credible.
Throw the kid out of the office is the other thing.
Yeah.
So be realistic about that. But go
exactly,
ahead.
Exactly. The relationship first.
Right.
So diehards, this is sales and leadership gold. And what I want you to do is join us on May 10th for our live Facebook discussion. Deb's going to be joining us back on May 10th. And in the meantime, go to our sellerdiepodcast.com show notes and get the link for the book where you'll save 20% on the book. And thank you guys for hooking us up with that kind offer.
Yep.
And go get the book so that you can read it along with us and discuss it and come to that Facebook Live with your questions for Deb. Deb, will you answer every question?
Every single question. Ask me anything. We're going to take care of it all.
Yeah. Okay, I love that. So I love that. Now, I'm not ending our interview. I just want to remind people to go out there right now and get the book before this episode's
over. Yeah, this
over.
Is a book that will not only make you think differently, I think it will make you think better.
Mm-hmm.
You've already heard a few words today that you didn't even know exist.
they weren't on my SAT list even.
I know.
Come on.
Come on. Outside? Give me a break.
That's
here.
Such this a good is word.
A damn good
and
word.
And ennoble.
Huh?
And ennoble.
I know ennoble, yeah. I feel like I want to go to Burger
down.
King and get a crown. Yeah, I'll have a one of those ennoble crowns, please.
Oh,
you want cheese with that?
So let's make this real for our diehards. Where do you begin? And I want each of you to answer this. Deb, if you want to go first, because ladies first. But where do you begin if you want to transition from seller to leader?
Inside your own head. You begin with thinking about yourself in a new way. About yourself as someone who is able to lead. Because the truth is, you already do. Whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not, people are paying attention to what you do. So you're leading them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, are you leading them to a place you want to take them? So you've got to think of yourself as a leader. And once you step into that role as a leader, then you have all kinds of new behaviors and choices that you can make that will make you more and more effective as you implement them more frequently.
Hmm. So diehards, are you leading someone into a commission or a relationship?
Ooh,
and well said.
That's the whole deal, because you can we get this done by Tuesday? That tells you that it's commission thinking rather than mission thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I would answer by just quoting Jeffrey.
Oh,
whoa.
My God. Jim, I'm sending you a Hall of Fame trophy.
Just
I don't
FYI,
even know what the
we
hell
we already
gonna...
have given out the Brown Noser Award of the Year.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You
Randall
can't win
Kenneth
that award.
Jones already
but
won that one.
You can win the Smartest Bald Guy Award.
Yeah, we share that.
Exactly.
But it is true. You know, you say in your 19 and a half principles of leadership,
mm-hmm.
the first principle is your philosophy of life and leadership determines the process by which you lead.
That is correct.
And the best place to begin the transition in any aspect of your life is to really take an inner journey and think about what are the values and beliefs that I hold about myself, about leadership, about my relationship with other people. Get real clear about that whenever you transition into doing anything differently. Why do you want to be a leader? in sales rather than simply the old stereotypical seller that people have a negative sense about. Answer for yourself all those questions and develop that philosophy of leadership.
And for those of you who don't understand what philosophy is, it somehow boils down to, what do you want your kids to say at your funeral? And that will give you some insight as to what you would want to run your life by, or how you would like to guide yourself first and then others second.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey, can I give you a little acronym to use in this context?
Sure, as long as it's clean.
It is very clean, and it's called LIFE, L-I-F-E.
Oh, cool.
And if you're doing the exercise that you just described, here are four things that you can do. The L is for lessons. What lessons do you want other people to say you taught them?
Mm-hmm.
I is for ideals. What values and vision do you want people to say you stood for? The F is for feelings. When people talk about you, how do you want them to describe the feelings they have or had when they were around you? And the E is for expressions or evidence. What are the tangible things that people can see that are evidence that you led, that you mattered, that you made a difference? LIFE. And we like to say that the life you lead is the legacy you leave.
Wow.
Good statement.
That's really good.
Yeah. Have you tweeted it?
Yes.
Good.
But I'll tweet it again now.
Yeah, you totally should.
Yeah. It'll save me the privilege.
I like it.
Thanks.
So do you think that, Jim, do you think that you can survive these days by just being a seller without being a leader?
I'm biased in this response. And I think
that's okay. I asked you.
Sellers, managers, individual contributors, parents, teachers, coaches need to understand that part of what they do in their life is lead. If you have kids, at some point in that relationship with those kids, you're leading them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a coach of a team, if you're a seller, you are leading your customer, whether you realize it or not. And it's important to understand that that is just part of what you are doing.
And part of what you're responsible for.
Yes.
So I'm looking at it from a standpoint of, this is a life lesson, not just a sales lesson.
Yeah.
And your acronym is very thought-provoking, for sure, because it's your acronym of LIFE is what you would want people to say about you in death.
Yeah.
It's pretty powerful.
Thanks.
So I would tweet it again. I'll retweet it if you tweet it. I'll follow you on Twitter.
I will too. I already wrote it down. I love it. And Deb, what do you think? Do you think that the two can be separate, selling and leading?
No, I think if you want to make a sale, you have to make a difference. And the best way you can make a difference is by being a leader. See, the word leader at its root means to guide. People want to be guided, especially if they're going to a place they've never been before. They need someone to come and clear the way forward for them and with them. And it's what makes you different from all the other sellers out there. And as AI and other things begin to come in and change the way selling is going to be in the future, if you want to survive as a seller, you've got to take some proactive measures now to mm-hmm. set yourself up for success.
And you have to do it on your own. You can't rely on other people to do it for you. This is something that no one's going to come around your house, give you the Vulcan mind meld, and put you on the path to intellectual and financial freedom. There's a small part in the middle where you work your ass off. And if you do that and you're learning constantly on a daily basis, and the buyers will help you learn. They will teach you what it takes to establish that leadership position, and they'll show you where your parameters are, what you can do and what you can't do within the confines of what they feel is comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what this book addresses. It shows you where you can go and where the edge is.
Yeah.
So I would buy the damn book if I were you, and I would do it as fast as I could.
Seriously, if you haven't bought it yet, what are you waiting for?
Exactly.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. This has been such a treat and such a pleasure, and This is so cool.
Yep. We love learning.
Thank you, Jen.
Yeah, and we love promoting. And you've helped us do both.
Before you go, what's the one thing you would want people to take away from the book?
Boo.
Only one.
I know, it's hard to choose.
You can actually
want them to take away that feeling of ennoblement, because that opens up the doors to do things differently and to feel good about the relationships that they're able to create with buyers, the ones that do matter.
I agree, and it's a feeling they've never felt before. Brand new for me as well. I mean, when I read the word, skipped over it, and then I thought, man, what does that mean? And then you've clarified it to a point where I get it.
Well, this is why, diehards, you have to join us on May 10th for our Facebook Live, so Deb can go into more detail about even just the five practices that you need to become a leader.
And Jim, what do you think? What's your parting word for these wisdom-based people?
I would say that you're already leading, just not frequently enough.
Oh, cool. That's way cool. And would it be possible for them, is there a way you can know to identify your leading? How do I know when I'm leading somebody?
When someone's following you.
Oh, so you just turn around?
Wait. Just turn around. If there's no one, if you turn around, no one's back there, you're just out for a walk.
Got it. Okay, so on that, diehards, we are going to leave you today. The book is called Stop Selling and Start Leading. And we recommend you go to Amazon.com right now and get yourself a copy, or go to our...
If you go to our show notes, you get 20% off the book. So go to our show notes, click on that link. It'll ship directly from their publisher and they get 20% off.
Cool.
Yeah.
So thank you guys. And we will see you soon. We will not see you, Jim, on our Facebook Live, but we'll be thinking about you.
Oh, thank you, Jeffrey.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Thanks to all the diehards.
Pleasure.
Bye. Diehards, thank you for listening to Sell or Die. If you like what you heard, make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. Give it a star in Overcast and tell a friend.
Tell both your friends. Just don't tell your competition. You can follow me on Twitter at Gittimer and Jen at Sales in Any Minute.
Send your sales questions to sellordie@gittimer.com. We'll be back next week with Motivation Monday and another amazing guest.
Until then, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And we're reminding you to get out there and sell or die.
Even if your ass falls off.